You're listening to Around Comics.
You are listening to Around Comics, episode 449. We're back after a spring, winter, late winter break. We're back just in time. Pitchers and catchers report as well as we do. I'm Brian Salazar. With me is Christopher. I spilled a glass of wine right before
everywhere.
The show started. And Tom, I'm surprised to be here. Caters. What's happening, John?
Hey, what's up?
It's everywhere.
You spilled wine like
it's
right
everywhere.
Right before we were going live.
A glass of Boone's Farm.
It was a nice little cab. It got all over my new Boba Fett Lego. It's my Mandalorian. It went everywhere.
You know, Chris never passes up an opportunity to show off something in his little den.
Oh, I spilled wine all over my expensive toys.
My Gucci shoes.
He's like, oh goodness gracious.
Mandalorian.
So we'll switch to this wonderful mezcal that picked up in Oaxaca, Mexico.
I thought you quit drinking. I thought you were sober now. What happened? No?
Yeah, whatever.
That didn't last? That didn't take?
Life's too short. Life's too short.
Right?
Yeah. All right. Tom, I'm getting a little bit of a buzz or something.
Yeah, there's a little crackle.
A crackle. I think
Is that me?
No, I think it's Tom's microphone.
Give me one second. Let me just try unconnecting it and reconnect.
It's like Morse code. We have Morse code. Do-do-do-do-do-do. Someone is... That's worse.
That's way worse.
Give me 1 minute. Back on in just a second. Let me see if I...
All right, we'll vamp.
16 years of podcasting excellence. So, tonight at some point... We need to talk about The Last of Us.
The Last. Did you like my little motion poster thing that I did?
I was jealous that it was so good.
Oh, thanks.
I was just like, God damn it! I'm gonna have to learn how to do this now.
It's pretty easy, honestly. It's not. I mean, Photoshop has so many tools
right
built into it at this point. It's really like what I did was me just going okay. You know, and what the hell, as long as we got time.
Yeah, throw it up there.
So, I was just playing around with Photoshop and like motion capture and, decided, hey, I'll do a Last of Us.
Cause you still have a hunger to like learn things.
Well, it's not, I guess part of it is just like, I don't do as much design work anymore and the design work I do is like prototyping for mobile apps and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's fun and I enjoy it, but it's a small percentage of the work that I do now. And it's not particularly creatively driven.
It's not cool, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like buttons and, you know, like there's only so much you're really doing to design an app. Like there's not a ton of creative design
in this
thing.
It's nice.
So I was like, oh, I want to try, you know, and I love the show. So so basically what I did with this is I took an image of The Last of Us and I pulled them out of it.
Layered it. Right.
Yeah. So I just took them out of that image, put in my own background. And a couple of different, you know, there's a couple of different photos on top of each other. And then I recolored the background. I recolored him a bit and her a bit to sort of blend it.
Sure.
And then I added video of like fog and leaves.
Falling leaves.
Yeah, just to give it a little motion.
The you know, it's one of the, it's a trick that a lot of photographers use. You know, I still do a lot of photography. You know, like train tracks are perfect, roads are perfect. It's leading lines is what we call them. You know, you want to lead the viewer, you know, to a point, and you know, so that that condenses that image to convey that message that they are, you know, on the road or on a journey. Yeah, it's fantastic. That at I'll tell you that that show is so good at what it does, and what it does is it forces
murder people.
The Walking Dead did that fine. You know, there's lots of shows and properties that do that, that, you know, just like, you know, Game of Thrones did that so well that it's like, we're going to get you to love these characters, then we're going to kill them off. Right? Like Bella Ramsey and Pascal have been through this on Game of Thrones. They were both like beloved characters on Game of Thrones, spoilers, that died. But Game of Thrones did it in like this everyone's going to die kind of thing where you expect it. The Last of Us, if you haven't played the game and you're watching the show, this last episode fucked me up so bad that I've watched it twice because apparently I'm a masochist, and I've gone through and just the setup that they do to make you not just care about, but fall in love with these characters and really emote with them, have empathy with them, understand them. They make scenes that make you understand their struggle in this horrible environment that they live in, and then they rip your fucking heart out and stomp on it so mercilessly that, you know, it is so well done from a craft standpoint, to a point that it's
painful. I don't know. I mean,
it's painful to watch that show. What spoilers, what they did with Sam and Henry in this last episode really fucked me up.
Yeah, but I mean, you say it's well done, but like, no, Tom, it's still clicking. You're a clicker. Tom is a clicker.
Is a clicker. He's sending out.
Yeah, let me just switch to.
Switch my.
Now it seems okay. I don't know, but no, I the problem I have with it is like it's. I don't think it's a hard thing to do to get like to get you to fall in love with people that are struggling. And then kill them off.
But they
is
do
sort of
so,
like
it, the
an
way
easy,
that they
cheap thing in my opinion.
The way that they did it with Ellie and Sam, it wasn't cheap. I mean, to see those kids playing together as kids and connecting with each other, and then that scene where spoilers, if you haven't seen The Last of Us,
it's too late now.
And then that scene where he, and it's, I mean, this is a game that's been around for 8 years. The scene where he reveals to her that he is infected, and she's like, my blood can heal you, because she wants to believe so much that she can heal her friend. And then when it doesn't work.
Yeah, but I thought, honestly, I mean, I'm not trying to tear down the episode or tear down the show. I enjoyed the show very much.
Awesome.
And it was a gut punch, like, at the end of that episode. But, like, analyzing it, you know, if I'm going to look at it critically, it's like, why would she be that dumb? Like, they don't portray her as a dumb character.
She was desperate. She finally had a... It's probably the first friend that she has had in her life, like friend.
I guess, but it just seemed like they don't even sort of give you the idea of like, oh, she's afraid to tell Joel about it because Joel will kill him.
Yeah.
And I guess you kind of assume that, or you know that.
She knows.
But the idea of, oh, my blood, why would she have the idea that her blood would heal him in that way?
That's the whole point of the show, is that
yeah, but
she's immune, and her blood. And in her mind, she's like 13 years old. Of course she thinks that her blood might be able to save this kid, her, this defenseless friend.
I don't think she's that young.
This is a Sal thumbs down. Well, thumbs down.
No, not at all. Not at all. I enjoy the episode.
Like, she's like 13 in the show. She's like 19 in real life. So.
I think the show is very good and I enjoy it, but I do get, like, it was part of The Walking Dead why I got annoyed at it was, you know, that was sort of, it was just sort of revenge porn. And it was just like, okay, we're going to.
I don't get that feeling with this, though.
No, but I do get the same feeling of like, oh, we're going to introduce, like, every character that they encounter is going to die. And mm-hmm. if it's just going to be episode after episode of them doing the same thing, I really am not that interested in the show.
Yeah.
It's annoying to me if you're just going to continue to do that episode after. It's cheap. I don't think it's that good of writing. I think, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's that good of craftsmanship to do that over and over and over again. If that's what you're going to do, like, what is the point of that exactly other than to sort of inflict pain on your viewers and to sort of, like, you know, every episode get people to talk about it, which I guess is, you know, something to do, but it doesn't necessarily make it a good TV show. Does it make it viral? Does it make it something to talk about? Yeah. Does it make it a good TV show? I don't know. I think it is a good TV show, but we've had, what, three episodes, and in two of them, it's essentially been, actually, all of
five.
Them.
It's five episodes.
Is it really five?
Know. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, in three or four of them, we've essentially been introduced characters.
Crippling death.
Yeah, and it's just like, okay, can we do something else in an episode? Yeah. Is that all this is going to be? Every episode is just going to be someone else.
I can't do that. I can't handle that emotionally.
Well, I can handle it emotionally. I just don't find it entertaining.
Yeah.
I don't find it interesting or very well.
It's good storytelling because it does create an emotional response. And I know, you know, we talk about it. So, you know, I have appointment television that I keep up with. One of them is The Last of Us. The other one is The Bad Batch.
National Curling.
No, The Bad Batch.
Bad Batch. Okay.
National Curling Championships.
What's going on? The U.S. Senior Nationals are at Wauwatosa right now and Kettle Moraine. So.
I can't believe you're here.
Anyway, I was doing ice. That's why I was like, are we recording at 8:30? I'm doing shit.
As the president of the club, but you obviously have responsibilities that you need to.
No, not for another 3 years.
As the president.
As the president.
He doesn't say, it's not of the club. It's just as the president.
As the president. It's only a matter of time until the rest of the board is gone, Chris. We all know it. You're going to.
Like a character from The Last of Us. They're all going to end up.
Just hanging on. Just hanging on. You know, but I watch The Last of Us and it like crushes my soul. It's really good storytelling. I enjoy it. And then I watch The Bad Batch, which also has a lot of emotion and all of the feels, but there's a little bit of uplifting to that, that show that I enjoy.
Lifts you up.
Where you don't, it's bleak, but there's a little bit more, you know, rays of sunshine in it that kind of keeps me hanging on, I guess. It's really good though. So that would, I don't know.
I'll have to take your word,
Chris,
for that.
It's really good.
You're just in Chris's bleak landscape, bleak hellscape of a mind, you know, where it's like, it's like Mordor up there. It's just like corrupted, you know, nature, the rules of nature have been bent, you know, to
twist. The sky is always black.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm going to dump all of my pop culture on the first, you know, half of the episode here. Something that is giving me a ton of joy right now that is going to alienate like half of the people that listen or watch this show,
including me,
for whatever reason. I'm playing Hogwarts Legacy.
Okay.
And it's fucking delightful. It's my wife and I are both playing it. It's a lot of fun.
Once again, I'll have to take a for it.
Tell me more about this game. What What are you doing?
You're a turf. Do you have to sign up to be a turf in order to play this game?
We'll dive into that a little bit because I understand.
Do we have to handle all the money?
Against my people, the anti-Semitism I can't support that. As I am a Jew now, I am Jewish.
Why do goblins have to be Jewish?
Why do the strange, suspicious creatures that handle all the money? I mean, come on. I mean, J.K.
with Rose. Bushy eyebrows and large noses, why would they be? You know, what the hell? What the hell?
I'm a horrible person. I'm enjoying the game.
We know. We understand. Seriously. I could care less. I've seen the game. My son has it. He says it's fun. Haven't played it. I've been playing UFC 4. I am now the double champ. I am the welterweight and light heavyweight champion of the world. I'm undefeated, 24-0, all first round knockouts. My skill is just undeniable. I am the greatest champion of all time in the UFC.
I'm the greatest. Okay, Ricky Henderson.
I'm a pretty good Mario Kart driver.
Just going to throw that out there.
I've been known to tear it up on the old 20cc course.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Do you spend all of your waking moments watching reality TV? Well, you're in good company. I'm Will.
And I'm Marissa. And we're the hosts of Cheers to Chaos Reality TV and Cocktails, a new weekly podcast that covers the ever so entertaining and cringy world of reality television.
Each week, we'll be raising our glasses and diving into the latest drama and chaos from our favorite reality TV shows.
From 90 Day Fiancé to The Bachelor. You've got all your reality favorites covered.
So grab a drink and join us as we clink our glasses to the hilarious and delightful train wrecks of reality TV.
Subscribe now to Cheers to Chaos, Reality TV and Cocktails on your favorite podcast platform.
Uh-oh, we lost Tom again.
Tom's gone.
Tom, oh, there he's back.
I'm here.
We're having internet problems, Tom.
Maybe.
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Did you guys watch the Flash trailer?
No, can we Super watch Bowl? It?
Absolutely. Yeah, because I only saw the teaser that was on.
I did not watch the Super Bowl. I watched the last 2 minutes of the Super Bowl.
Oh, just the last 2 minutes.
Well, it was a good game. That's all you got to watch, right? The last 2 minutes of an NFL game.
No, it was a good game. What are you talking about? It was terrific.
Eagles fans would disagree with you.
Well, it was a good game. It's not my fault their team choked. I can't help that they gave
up. Don't hold.
Gave up freaking 25 points or whatever in the fourth quarter. All right, here we go. Here is the actual full trailer. Let's take a look.
Tell me something. You can go anywhere. Another timeline. Another universe. So why do you want to stay and fight to save this one? Because this is the world where my mom lives. I'm not going to lose her again.
Can you guys hear this?
Time has a pattern that it can't help reliving. Different people, different worlds, drawn to each other like magnets.
My face.
One. Stole my face.
You stole my face.
If you were to go into the past, you have no idea what the consequences can be. Bruce, I could fix things. You could also destroy everything.
This can't be happening. I completely broke the universe.
Zod, we've been waiting for you.
I created a world with no metahumans. And now there's no one to defend us.
Want some help?
Oh. You're...
Nice.
You are...
Yeah. I'm Batman.
That's awesome.
60 years.
If I can't undo what I did, if I can't get back, there might not be a future.
What's the play? Batman, what do we do?
We try not to die.
It's not Clark.
My name is Kara.
I'm
well, we're back.
Barry, what are you doing?
Our kids are gonna want to see this.
There you go.
That looks super fucking fun.
Yeah, it does. I think it's interesting. I mean, you know, it's interesting because there's been, you know, there's like, I don't know what it was on. It was TikTok or Instagram or YouTube or something. And it was some 40-something-year-old dude like screaming into a microphone and saying that, like, they can't let Ezra Miller be Flash. That is a fireable offense. Whoever is letting this happen should be fired. It's like, really? Like, why do you really care that deeply about who's, you know, the actor in a movie and what he's
Ezra
done?
Ezra Miller is kind of a train wreck of a person.
Listen, he's a young, rich, famous kid who's been drunk and done some stupid shit. Yeah. Oh, big fucking deal.
Is
okay?
it gonna make a re- is he gonna be really entertaining in a Flash movie? It appears so. It
appears to well, but,
all right,
but I was thinking, about it.
Let's,
hold
let's
on.
Talk to the resident Flash fan. Tom, your opinion.
It'll probably be okay. Yeah.
life will go on.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. Whatever. It's
but I was thinking about it like, okay, you would think, you know, he certainly has had enough things in his short time as a famous person that most studios would not continue on with the movie. But my thinking is this is such an important part of the DC, like the next 10-year plan for DC. This movie is so important that they have to release the movie. Like, they just can't start over because this is going to reset the entire universe. I mean, they basically say it in the trailer. Yeah. Like, this
it's
is going to reset everything.
It's Flashpoint.
Yeah, they're going to retcon. I said they're going to retcon Superman doesn't kill Zod.
Yeah.
So Superman never kills. They're going to get rid of all this stupid Scott Snyder bullshit. Or, not Scott Snyder. What's the other Snyder? Zack Snyder bullshit.
Hey, be careful. He's one of Green Bay's favorite sons, next to Tony Shalhoub.
Well,
It's fine. It's fine.
I think, yeah.
I didn't like his movies. I didn't like his movies that much. So,
but I think that's really what it is. Like, we have to put this movie out because it's just, if we don't, then we don't have a 10-year plan. Like, we don't, you know what I mean? We're going to have to make another movie and put everything.
They're like, just put it out.
Yeah, fuck it. We'll take the heat. Like, what's the word? But I also think, like, you know, it's funny. The Harry Potter game. Nobody seems to stop buying Harry Potter shit as much as people now hate J.K. Rowling.
It's already one of the best selling games of all time.
Nobody gives a shit. Yeah. And I don't think anyone really gives a shit about what Ezra Miller has done or hasn't done. Yeah. I think it's just like, I don't know if we're getting to a point where we're sort of past the idea of everyone's offenses have to be reconciled before they're allowed to exist.
I think people are starting to realize that internet outrage exists on the internet, and a whole lot of people don't live and die on the internet like people think they do.
Right. Yeah.
I also think part of, like, just generally in culture the last 6 years, like, people sort of discovered that, like, that you don't have to actually be embarrassed by what you've done.
Well, that's the funny thing. Nobody shows shame like in about anything. About actual things. There is no shame in it. Like once people realized, hey, I can be horrible and do stupid shit constantly and make a ton of money doing it. Everyone just got rid of any shame whatsoever, except, you know, it's like if you are, you know, an actor or something, then you're supposed to have shame. But everyone else, like any YouTube
when Kobe Bryant died horribly and we collectively celebrated the life of Kobe Bryant and didn't like mention the like horrible rape, I was like, yeah, people can get over anything.
Alleged rape. It was alleged.
Yeah sure.
What? He wasn't convicted of any crime.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, whatever.
Listen, I'm just saying.
At that point, I was just like, you know what? People can get over anything.
Well, that's just, I mean, it is silly. It's like people just act like, you know, every offense is such the biggest thing and everyone has to be accountable. But the reality is, you know, I don't know if you guys, if either of you been watching Sarah Silverman on the
Daily Show, a couple clips here and there.
So the one I was laughing at was she brought up the story that in like Iowa and somewhere else, there's like Republican governors or Republican politicians that are trying to lower the legal working age for children to like 14 and like how many hours they can work. And they want them to work in like the meatpacking industry and construction, shit like that.
Yeah. But not immigrants.
Yeah. No,
well, just children, not 14 year olds. Children. Yeah. Yes. But not fucking immigrants.
And there was a skit about it. And Roy Wood Jr., who I think is just hilarious and genius. He's like, no, I hate, you know, his whole thing was like, there's a kid named Kevin on his block who he hates and he wants him to get a job. So he stops egging his house and stuff like that. And Sarah Silverman's like, wait, I don't think this is right. We can't have children, you know, in the workforce. This is not right at all. And he's like, do you have an iPhone? It's like, yeah, we can get over anything. Yeah. You know, if it's just far enough away from us, we can let anything slide. So, yeah,
it's like that guy from the rep from Long Island, you know, who turned out he made up a bunch of his stuff. You know, it's like
Santos.
You don't have to quit. Yeah, you don't have to quit.
No.
Yeah,
there's no. You just, hey, there's no shame.
Yeah. We will bring this back to comics, and comics have repeatedly throughout history outsourced work to artists in countries that they could pay less to.
Like, that's everyone.
Ernie Chan was a prolific anchor because he lived in the Philippines.
Well, you know, it's I don't know. It's all silliness. Yeah. It's just speaking of comics, though. So I thought it was interesting. You know, we didn't get a chance to talk about James Gunn, though. He announced the whole
the DC slate
of things, and then according to a website called Cover Price, the weekly top 10 of the week of February 6th were all the books related to what he announced. So the number one book was Authority. Number two is the Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Batman, of course, DC Legends, Booster Gold, Swamp Thing. All those things in there, which is kind of interesting that, you know, just not even the movies, just an announcement. And all of a sudden,
but they will.
Yeah, it's pretty well. What'd you guys think? I mean,
you want to do a point by point rundown of them that can kind of be the second half of the show?
Give me the list.
I don't know if
give me the list. Do it.
I don't know if I got to look up a list. Hold on. Oh, I don't think I have the list.
No, I'm.
Do you got the list?
I'm excited.
When you put me on the spot, I didn't have it pulled up.
Let's start just because I grabbed it off the top of the stack. Tom King's Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, is going to be the basis for the relaunch of Kara Zor-El, even though we see that we see Kara in Flashpoint, right? Or the Flash movie.
The Flash movie, yeah.
We're assuming that that is going to be Supergirl.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure why. I mean, I think James Gunn mentioned he really loved that book.
Oh, it's a great book.
I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the basis of Supergirl, because that book is her not on the planet. So I'm not sure if necessarily that book is going to be the basis of the Supergirl in the DCU, but it looks like we're going to have Supergirl in the DCU and probably a big part of it. But yeah.
I do like that they're doing something that Marvel has gotten very good at since the Disney acquisition, in that they're going to start making money, but they're going to start interweaving the TV, or the not TV, I guess we should say, the serialized properties with the movies. We're going to see a much tighter integration between what they're doing on HBO Max with what they're going to do with the movies, like we're seeing Marvel do with Disney Plus, right?
Although they just recently announced that they're gonna have less shows on Marvel Disney Plus, so they're gonna spread them out more. They're not gonna have as many.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we're starting to see the end of the streaming wars, where it was this explosion. Part of that was, you know, with COVID, even though I think a lot of that was slated before COVID hit. But, you know, it was just like an avalanche of new series and creative output. And I think a lot of the streaming services have been like, yeah, maybe a little too much, and this costs a lot of money. And so we're seeing, you know, less. We're seeing a lot of stuff is being shelved and pulled, you know, prematurely. But I think with the comic stuff, we're going to still see a nice stream of entertainment, both DC and Marvel properties.
Yeah. So if we want to continue, I do have the list now. So we do have Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, Science Fiction Adventure, which will be based on Tom King. Oh, okay. So you are right. It is going to be based on his amazing award-winning recent comic stories. Presents a Supergirl viewers are not used to seeing. So maybe she will be off planet.
Right. It's serialized.
No, that's a film project.
Okay. That's a film. Okay.
Yeah. So films,
it's a great book. Yeah. Read it. It's a great book.
Films are Superman Legacy, written by James Gunn. It'll hit theaters July 11th, 2025. It will focus on Superman balancing his Kryptonian heritage with his human upbringing. That sounds boring.
they have not announced Superman, though. It's apparently Henry Cavill is out.
Yeah, but maybe that's, who knows, that could be a smokescreen.
I like him. He's a good Superman with a good script.
He's a little old now, though. I think that, you know, he's fine. They could find some other big dude to, you know,
sure,
or some other handsome guy they can put on steroids. That's a
man. Let's get him ripped. Superman ripped.
Another film would be The Authority.
Nice.
Wildstorm characters will join the DCU as members of the Authority, take matters into their own hands to do what they believe is right. I'm assuming that's sort of not going to be quite as
gray area. Enter the gray area.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like that movie has the potential to be a big letdown to,
could be,
well, to Authority fans.
Yeah.
Because
it won't be as,
yeah,
fucking
crazy, but maybe it will. I mean, it's James Gunn. Look what he did with Peacemaker and Suicide Squad. So who knows? Maybe it will be R-rated and fucking crazy. It'll be interesting.
It might be one of those things too, where it's like all the stuff that it's influenced since it came out has happened, and people have, you know, and then you're like, oh, okay, yeah.
Do you think that
like it's,
do you think that the Authority runs the risk of being 25 years old at that point, and we think of it very nostalgically. But when it hits mass audiences, it won't seem as impactful.
I mean, it depends on who makes it, right? Like, anyone can... I can see it working, like, just like if you think of just like the widescreenness of it, mm-hmm. I could see someone capturing that idea, like just like everything's huge and big and like making it a spectacle, sort of an Avatar-esque, like,
or is
just
it,
like,
is it more like The Boys?
Yeah, it's like, mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. Like, there's different things you can pull from it to be like, what's like going to be the like thing that's most interesting or most like compelling, right? Or like, you know, from that book.
Yeah. It sounds like they're going to lean a little bit on sort of the anti-authoritative nature of the authority, mm-hmm. you know, where yeah. they were not, you know, they weren't the JLA, they weren't the JSA, they're the Avengers, they're not working for anyone, they're doing whatever they thought was the right thing, which yeah. was what the authority started out as. Mm-hmm. You know, that was sort of the idea. It's like it's the, you know, JLA, but they don't give a fuck.
Did you like the Warren Ellis authority or the Mark Miller authority?
I probably liked the Warren Ellis more than the Mark Miller, but yeah. I liked them both.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I liked them both.
I love the Mark Miller, Frank Quietly authority.
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean,
so good.
Yeah.
I think they're both good in different ways.
Yeah, yeah. They're different.
Yeah, I mean, they're different. Yeah. Right? Like, I really liked the, you know, the Ellis authorities, like just like giant scope,
big ideas,
you know, of just like huge, how huge everything was, and like that's very, very bold, you know, both artistically and story-wise, of being that sort of widescreen and big action, and like at the time it was like a whoa, you know, like what is this, like just felt different and like
will we have the first male gay superhero couple in the authority?
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe.
Yeah, for sure.
Are they, would they be the first? I'm just trying to think. Would they be the first?
From like the big two.
Right. Well, I mean, in movies. I'm not talking about in comics. I'm just saying,
big two movies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
Right? I can't think of anything else.
Probably missing something, but yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Next up is The Brave and the Bold. The DCU will introduce its Batman and Robin in this unusual father-son story inspired by Grant Morrison's comic series. So are we going to see Bat-Cow in The Brave and the Bold? My son was blown away when he saw Bat-Cow in the in the cartoon, the animated Super Sons, which was awesome.
Well, this
and I'm
is
like,
be
I know who did that. I'm like, that's Chris Burnham created Bat-Cow.
This is going to be Damian, right?
I assume, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Father and son, so yeah. Yeah, Damian, it's going to, yeah, Batman. Who's going to be Batman? It's not going to be...
Ben Affleck?
Michael Keaton? Is it going to be Michael Keaton?
No.
No. Ben Affleck's too old.
It's not going to be Affleck. It's going to be a new Batman. I wonder.
And it's not going to be Edward Diggory.
Who's that?
Twilight guy.
The Batman.
Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, it's not going to be Pattinson.
Yeah, why wouldn't it be, though?
Because I think they put out a release that those movies and like the Joaquin Phoenix Joker exist out of canon.
Alternate universe?
Yeah, it's out of canon.
Interesting. Okay.
Different Earth.
Different Earth.
Yeah. Yeah, it is funny how they're just going right back to fucking, you know.
It's pre-crisis.
Alternate
baby.
Realities, baby.
Pre-crisis.
We never learned our lesson.
Yeah. Tell good stories.
Yeah. Then we got Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. Then we have Swamp Thing.
Yay,
the
again.
Film will investigate the dark origins of Swamp Thing. I don't see Swamp Thing really working that well as a film.
It never does. It never does.
It's just such an odd.
It's because it's never that much about Swamp Thing,
right?
You know, it's like, you know, like he's part of the story, but what made, like, I guess what, when I think of like the Alan Moore Swamp Thing or the better Swamp Thing stories I've heard, it's like he's a part of like a bigger, wider tapestry of things,
right?
You know, where it's like hard to be like, here's a story about Swamp Thing doing Swamp Thing stuff.
He's like the Crypt Keeper, right?
Okay.
Do we get
he's the Crypt Keeper?
Yeah, he's got a little bit of that. Where, I mean, Alan Moore used him as the vehicle to tell stories about really fucked up people.
Yeah,
and he was the, you know, he was the, I don't know, magic character that came in. He's the
Sandman.
Yeah, he's the Sandman of that universe, and so that's I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do with it, because there's different things you can do. Do you make it, you know, a horror kind of movie? Do you make it? Well, but
it's,
are you going to make
best,
it? You're
going to,
but
it's a horror
at its best, right? To you, but like for a major motion picture, are most people going to want to go see?
It's not going to be a rom com.
Hey, don't. Hey, that Adrian Barbeau.
It's what? James Gunn. So you never know, right?
You never know.
Sometimes it was a rom com. Right?
Sometimes,
you know.
Yeah. Then we got the television projects for HBO Max. We got Creature Commandos, a 7-episode animated show in which Amanda Waller creates a black ops team out of monstrous prisoners. James Gunn wrote all the episodes of the first season, so that sounds awesome.
Ryan, the lead is going to be Bride of Frankenstein, I believe.
Nice.
Sign me up.
But because, you know, we know that in most military units, a woman is leading. That's
absolutely
how historically, that's how we've seen things. We got Waller starring Viola Davis. This series features Team Peacemaker and will be written by Crystal Henry and Jeremy Carver from Watchmen and Supernatural,
nice,
respectively.
Viola Davis of the EGOT now.
That's a weird, like,
EGOT.
What's that show going to be, though?
It's going to be about Waller fucking people up.
That sounds kind of, but no, I mean, it's Viola Davis. She's, are they going to like, it's going to be a prequel, like her in the field. It's going to be her in a fucking office. Like, what is that going
to, it's going to be her sending people out to fucking die.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's the wall, man.
Booster Gold uses basic technology from the future to pretend to be a superhero in present day. That, you know, James Gunn behind that, it has to be funny. You got to get somebody who's the right guy to play Booster Gold. I mean, it has to be someone that can just be a likable schmuck.
20 years ago, Greg Kinnear.
I don't think Greg Kinnear was funny enough.
Okay.
I love Greg Kinnear. I think he's terrific.
20 years ago, Ashton Kutcher.
Maybe.
No one that I can think of now.
Ryan Reynolds is the obvious choice,
I
think.
I was thinking not Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling. Right. Yeah, 10
he's
years
pretty
ago,
funny.
Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
Well, why 10 years ago?
Because he's too old now.
Why does he have to be young?
You think Ryan Gosling would be good at it?
I think I mean, we've talked about The Good Guys. And he's
nice guys.
Or nice guys.
No,
love the movie.
Thank you, Filmforce 5, for turning me on to now one of my all-time favorite fucking movies.
Great movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Great movie.
Yeah, he's really funny, and he could pull off the part. He can pull off like the, I'm going to like con my way into like, you're going to think I'm a hero.
Right.
Like vibe of it, of being able to like,
but enough of a doofus,
kind of almost pull.
Okay,
it,
James,
yeah.
James Gunn, we know you're listening. Ryan Gosling as Mr.
Yes,
Gold,
of course. I don't think it'll be Ryan Gosling, but it'll be interesting to see who they get. Then we get The Lanterns, or Lanterns, enormous TV event series follows the intergalactic cops of John Stewart and Hal Jordan as they uncover a dark mystery. Is this going to be like a buddy cop, buddy space cop movie?
I hope so. And you I'm calling it now.
I'm getting too old for this shit.
Guy Gardner is going to be a part of it.
Oh, he has to.
Even though they're not announcing it.
Yeah, even if it's just a cameo, you got to have... I mean, that's the beautiful thing about a show like that is you can have so many other characters come in and out of it. And I mean, it's space, so you can do all sorts. And you know James Gunn loves being in space. So it's going to...
James Gunn loves his Grant Morrison is what you're really learning from this. Of like between, you know, talking about Ultimates, you know, the All-Star Superman and like referencing for this or like Batman and Robin.
Right.
You know, like all those elements. It's like this sounds a little bit like the... Morrison Green Lantern where it was all like he's a space cop and like
I just
he's out
not an insurance salesman
not a toy salesman or a truck driver.
Well, that was what called Green Lanterns, right? Or the Green Lantern, right? I think
I forget what exactly what it was, but
I hope it's like a buddy kind of. I mean, obviously they're not going to do like a straight Lethal Weapon sort of buddy cop thing, but like play on that a little bit, maybe. Yeah.
I think would be kind of funny. I think they'll pull a lot on the Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams run of the liberal conservative angle of it.
Okay, makes so who's a lot of sense. Who's the conservative? Hal?
Hal's always the conservative. Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose.
Hal's a cop, man. Hal was always a Republican.
Hal was a pilot. He was never a cop. He was a freewheeling jet pilot fighter.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
He's
in Hal, the '60s.
Yeah, Hal was always the Republican out of the group. And Ollie was
Either of them.
No, were. Ollie was always the
super
the,
liberal, but
the liberal. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. Yeah.
Maybe they flip it and they make the black guy the conservative.
I doubt it. I doubt that's going to happen.
Yeah.
The white.
I doubt that it'll be, I doubt it's going to pull from that.
I hope not, because that sounds terrible. I don't want to watch that already. Okay. I don't want to watch that. Please don't do that. Just make it fun and space cops. And, you know, they could have different views, but I don't want like the Republican Hal Jordan. That's not, you know what I mean? Like
nobody wants the Republican Hal Jordan.
Then we have Paradise Lost, set in Themyscira, home of the Amazons and birthplace of Wonder Woman.
This drama focuses on 100 years ago or something.
Well, why don't you let me finish reading?
I'm sorry. Shut up.
Focuses on the genesis and political intrigue of an island of all women. So there you go. Yeah, it'll be before Wonder Woman. So there you go. That's sort of the slate of 10 movies and shows that they're going to be doing after The Flash. So some cool shit.
I watch them all.
Yeah.
In James Gunn, I trust. I do like James Gunn.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll be fun. I think I think someone with like maybe a sense of humor might do Superman some good.
Yeah. Right.
Like, as opposed to, like, the sort of deathly serious, like, you know, like, someone with a little more, like, willing to have fun.
You mean not an alpha bro with a fucking ego the size of Rhode Island?
Yeah, maybe just inject, like, Superman's also kind of charming and, like...
Although I'm a little worried because Supergirl already looks like she's just constantly pissed off.
She does look angry.
All right. Can we not have everybody angry all the time, maybe?
Well,
yeah.
What's
did look like she was in some type of prison though. So
yeah,
it's like,
yeah, I get that.
I mean,
negative, she got negative zoned, maybe.
I just hope they
Phantom Zone. Oh, sorry. You mean
Phantom Zone, sorry.
Negative zone.
Sorry.
Jesus Christ.
So speaking of people that lighten things up and make things fun, let's wrap up. Tom told us that he took a big Frank Miller dive.
The big shit on Frank Miller. What? No, so what is this Frank Miller dive? What? How did?
I was, you know, after we talked about Kevin O'Neill, and I was sort of like, I was thinking about like the thing that I liked about Kevin O'Neill was like how it was like you couldn't quite peg what type of story it was from the art all the time, and it didn't always like you kind of had. It would be hard sometimes to kind of like be like, ah, I know what this story is, you know. So I was, and we've talked about Dark Knight Returns so much lately. I decided to reread it,
nice.
And I was like, and you know, I read some Daredevil, went back, you read some All-Star Batman, and
wow,
yeah, I was just like, because I was like, oh, you know what, like. And I won't say this about all of them, because I don't think All-Star Batman quite lives up to the same level as Dark Knight Returns. But, you know, one of the things that, you know, when I was reading those, I was like, oh, that's actually kind of how Frank Miller makes me feel, too, where I'm like, sometimes I'm not sure what I'm supposed, like, how exactly I'm supposed to feel about what's happening in this story. And, like, the way, especially like in Dark Knight Returns, which, you know, as any true great piece of literature does, it always holds like more, it always holds more like surprises within it, the different times that you read it, right? And you're like, now I feel differently about this I did, you know, like the last time I read it, as opposed to like, as much as I enjoy a good Flash issue from like, you know, the 70s, I can't say that any different viewpoint of it pops up when I read it now as opposed to that. But, you know, reading Dark Knight Returns this time, the thing that really struck me was sort of like, and I maybe it was because we were talking about Kevin O'Neill, where I was like, oh, you know, Frank Miller's really like, he's really fucking with me in this, because I never really quite know, like, he always, like, there's an element to it where you're like, I see the point of view that he has, that he's, or I don't know if he has it, but this is like the point of view of which this story is told, of like, everything is falling apart, and like, you know, our permissive society has allowed things like the mutants to take over, and Robin's parents are old hippies who don't even pay attention to her. And there's these elements where it's like, okay, I see where the viewpoint of this is, right? But then he'll like undercut it with some things too, where you're like, oh, wait a second. Like, I thought I was almost certain I totally knew where it was, but it's almost like he sneaks things in there to make you be like, I'm unsettled and I don't know. And like, he does such a good job of selling you on like Batman as like this figure of like sort of righteous fury and like anger and justice is a good thing in this permissive world where we have allowed gray area to like mix into everything. But then anytime you are in Batman's thoughts, Batman's a lunatic who never talks about doing anything for anybody other than like, I want revenge and I want to hurt the bad guys.
It's just about the war.
It's just about the war. There is no point where he's like, for the good of the city, I need to do this. Like, at least in his internal monologue, when you hear him thinking, it's never that, right? It's all about trauma. And it's about his revenge, and it's about like the thing in him that he can't control. Like, he tried not to be Batman, but it didn't work. Now he's Batman again, you know, and like just the unsettledness of that, like of like when you're not in Batman's head, it's clear that Batman is like, yes, we need somebody like this to do this. Like, and all, you know, the doctors saying that Two-Face is healed, you know, they're just permissive, weak, you know, like liberals
brain shrinkers
in this world, yeah. Right? Yeah. And then when you get in Batman's head, you're like, this guy does not care about, like, I mean, he does care about the times he does reference, like, people dying is in relation to, like, how many have I let the Joker kill? Like, it's very abstracted, you know, and it's more about his relationship to the Joker than, like, an actual, like, feeling about other people. And I guess in previous times when I've read it, I've never really, like, thought about, like, and again, it's like one of those things where I think, I don't know if you do that, if you would ever do that on purpose. I don't know if he's doing that on purpose.
I don't think, but, so. Like, I don't think he's doing either of those things on purpose. I don't think that he's purpose. Necessarily, and I think that's where, like, we tend to read into things in some ways.
Yeah.
Because, like, to me, The Dark Knight Returns was much more like Taxi Driver. Like, I don't watch Taxi Driver and think that that Travis Bickle's perspective is Martin Scorsese's perspective.
No.
And yet people read The Dark Knight and they think Batman's perspective is Frank Miller's perspective.
Oh, that's interesting.
I wouldn't say Batman's perspective is his perspective.
Well, the perspective of the book, yeah, though, is his perspective, yeah, as opposed to I'm telling a story about a character in a place and I'm just telling the story of how I see those characters, how I see that place, as opposed to Frank Miller has some sort of message that he's trying to give to us through Batman.
But I do think it's born of it's of a time, right? It's right. Born of, like, a late 80s sort of, like,
mid-80s.
Well, you know, early mid-80s. 80s is when it was done.
Yeah.
But, like, sort of that mid, like, the fear of crime in cities, mm-hmm, like, of, like, that time period, yeah, was a thing, like, culturally.
Well, more in the 70s.
Early 80s, it was fucking rough.
Well, no, the 80s ushered in, I mean, because of the 70s and the crime, sure, that was rampant and, yeah, and everything in major cities and the fear, you know, that ushered in the Republican, you know, Reagan era, which was all about control and law and order. I mean, it's very common. It's like, you know, it happens over and over again. Law and order, you know, so that was Trump in a nutshell.
But I was going to say, you know, like, I think I don't know. You know, I don't think he has some agenda with it. I think that's just, there's, like, the structure of this book is, like, the story that's to me is, like, within the story, that's the tension of the story is, like, because he's always constantly pitting, like, different viewpoints, but he also does tricks in that too of, like, when, you know, as he foresees the future of talking heads endlessly, mm-hmm, like, talking about stuff and
nothing,
the perceptions of stuff.
Talking about nothing.
And talking about nothing. Yeah, talking about nothing. Or just, like, you're right and I'm wrong. And, like, doing things with that too that's really interesting, where it's like he never lets, just when you think maybe, like, one of the viewpoints is, like, the viewpoint that's correct, he'll, like, undercut it a little bit of, like, yeah, that's not, like, this person isn't totally right. When he goes into the elements where he's talking, where he shows Batman inspiring people, like, he undercuts it too, because it's like the idea of, like, the guy who's, like, a failed wrestler who puts on a Batman costume and gets murdered,
right,
trying to stop,
yeah,
a crime. You know?
It's not, it's a, like, good thing. He's not presenting it like, oh, he's inspiring people, but that's not necessarily a good thing.
It's not a good thing. Right. And it's like, the way he mixes all those elements together is interesting. And I think, like, as I get older and I read it, and as I think current events bring things back around, right? Like, things always come back around. Mm-hmm. Like, the tension in that story is a tension that still exists. It exists more now than probably any time in my adult life, where you are having these conversations about, like, what is the nature of crime? Like, is it because we're permissive? Is it because can people be rehabilitated? Can someone be, you know, like,
fixed, or are they fixed, just bad? Or,
what they are.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, all right. It's like, what are those things, right? And, like,
what causes crime?
It
No, and I think that's, like, let me ask you this, because I didn't really think about this before, but as you were sort of talking about it, something came into my mind. Do you think that in some ways, because now looking at it in the way that you're describing it, you've sort of, I'm thinking of it again. And in some ways, I almost look at, like, you know, the way that he portrays Gotham as a permissive city and a permissive culture that's allowing this stuff to happen. Mm-hmm. He also uses it as an excuse for Batman, for Bruce Wayne to be Batman again.
Yeah.
But he doesn't present that as a good or healthy thing. Like, he presents that as this is an obsessive guy who now has an excuse to put on a costume and go beat people up.
Batman's a lunatic.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So it's not, like, and that's why it's so fucked up, because it's like, he's showing us, oh, look at this city. Look at these, you know, the doctors and the scientists, they're so weak, and they give everybody a pass. And that's why these criminals are out of jail or out of mental institutions. That's why the Joker gets out. Right. But he doesn't necessarily present then the solution to that is Batman as a positive thing. Where you would think
because it's like, because it's also like set up in a way where, like, if you took the Batman part, this seems stupid to say, if you took the parts where you have a window into what Batman's thinking, and you made a book that had just the news talking about him or like people talking about him, like, it's different, right? Because like all that stuff starts leaning into like the myth of Batman, and like people like reacted like, oh, he's back, you know, and like it's that like tension to me, like, that's really interesting, of like, because you'll flip from one page of that to like Batman, who's doing something heroic, but is like, he's possessed. He's like not,
he's obsessed,
like,
he's obsessed about, he's revenge, not,
like, finally I can save Gotham. And like, you know, like, he saves people, but it's always like
secondary
in context of like hurting the bad guys. Like, he's obsessed with hurting that. Like the with like,
it's an excuse.
It's interesting.
It's an excuse for him to do what he wants to do, which is beat the shit out of bad guys, because he's full of pain from his parents being murdered. And a victim is just gives him the excuse. And that's how he sort of portrays them, is they almost don't matter, except they give him a reason to go do what he wants to do. It's not a healthy thing. And that's why it's like, I know in, you know, after 9/11, Frank Miller, his
had a little meltdown.
Well, whatever. I mean, he was, this things that he said and reaction to that, I think in a lot of people's minds, portrayed him in a certain way. And right or wrong, I don't know the man. I've met him once a long time ago for a very brief second, but I don't know the man at all, so I have no idea what his politics are or what, you know, what he thinks about this kind of stuff. But I feel like that has so tainted his work that even something like this, where I don't know that it's necessarily, like, you can point to it and say, well, this is a, you know, sort of right-wing conservative Batman. It's a fucking lunatic of a Batman, but he doesn't portray that as a good thing, like as a positive thing.
It's like almost like, I don't know, I think I said this last time we were talking about it. He has a window into that mindset that you can see that, like, he gets it. You know, like, when in that book, when he's talking about like the permissive society and like all these things, he like, he hits that hard.
Yeah.
You know, like,
he empathizes like with that point of view.
Yeah. Like, he can get into that mind space and you get it and you feel it, which I think is unique. Like, I don't know that, like,
I think it's very unique. There's a lot of people for a 20 something.
Yeah.
To be able to do that.
Yes. Yeah,
right.
Like, for a 50 something, like, yeah, it's, I don't think it's that unique. Yeah, but for a 20 something to tap into that, I think
he did this in 1985. He was doing this.
But do you think it's something that he agrees with, or that he?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
I just think he's got, he obviously in his, like, I agree, like, a lot of the post 9/11 stuff, I think you can't help but sort of be a little bit like,
absolutely,
okay, what's right, mm-hmm. you know, because, like, he has very much, like, made
public, like, statements that would yeah, make would you
make you
yeah absolutely think things that, right? Justifiably so.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, I don't know. I don't think it's like, I don't think it's like something like it's been in the back of his mind, but I think he's obviously someone who can wrap his head around those thoughts, sure. right?
Yeah, of course.
And he's somebody, even when he's younger, like,
or
gets, like,
he, but once again,
like,
or is it, to me, it's like, especially now that I've spent a great deal of time watching and studying yeah. the movies of the 70s and the early 80s. I mean,
yeah.
but no, if you look at like a movie like Dirty Harry, mm-hmm. you look at Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
You know, those movies were the beginning of that sort of thing. And they're two very different movies though. Like, they're very similar yeah. in some ways. But the point of view of both of them, you know, in Dirty Harry, it's like, you know, it is that, permissive society, and Dirty Harry needs to clean it up. And
yeah.
it does a really good job of that, of like, you know, guy and like the Charles Bronson movies, you know, he did
Death Wish.
Oh yeah. Somewhere yeah, on your
Death Wish.
Your Death Wish to Dirty Harry.
There's some Billy, some Billy Jack in there.
Yeah. Your spectrum of the world is falling apart.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I don't,
like, but, where you fall on the Death Wish to, yeah.
But then
to Taxi Driver spectrum.
Taxi Driver is, it's the same movie in a sense as Dirty Harry.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Except
motivation.
Yeah. And Scorsese is not, you know, telling you that this guy's a good guy.
No, he's telling, he's,
you know what I mean?
He is telling a story about this guy.
So that's why I then point to Dark Knight, and it's like, is Frank Miller telling you that Batman's a good guy in that book?
No, he's telling a story.
I don't know.
No.
About,
I don't know.
Yeah. I think what makes Frank Miller's, you know, what makes Dark Knight Returns different from those is, I think it's harder to get a grasp on it than it is in Taxi Driver. Like, at times, like, because, like, I think comics also give you that opportunity, right? Of, like, he can tell, there's so much visual changes to, like, how certain scenes happen, to how the page turns from one thing to the next, where he can unsettle you in a way that, like, Taxi Driver can't. Like, Taxi Driver, like, you're kind of, like, you kind of grasp what Travis Bickle
early on.
There's, like, gray areas early on, but you get. Like,
there's hints very early on that he is not a stable person, that he is not, you know, someone, you know, that is doing things for the right reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas I think, like, in Dark Knight Returns, there's, like, a little bit of, like, also because it's a superhero, right? Like, Batman can affect a huge thing. He can, because there is no limit to what Frank Miller can be, like, Batman is going to, you know, like, he's gonna arrest all the mutants in one shot, you know, like, I can do that. Or he's gonna harness a whole army. Like, there's no budget limitation,
you know?
So, like, he can do these fantastical things, you know, and, like, that's part of it too, because it's still a superhero book, you know? Yeah. Like,
when this comes out, we're not that far removed from Adam West Batman.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's why it was such a groundbreaking thing, because it was such a different, take on Batman. But I think, you know, it certainly does not portray mental illness in a very good light, though. There's no forgiveness for mental illness in the Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, no, it's like, you're bad.
You're bad, and there's no fixing you. And
there's no fixing you. But it's like, it's that he finds a way of mixing that stuff in a way where it's like, that's a very clear, like, story element, right, that's like very clearly laid out, but like finding ways of making you like undercutting it at the same time as you go along. Well, anyway, it's a great book. Every time I read it, I always find something else to think about it that I haven't thought about.
I think we should do a deep dive on DKR. I don't think that we've ever done it. We've talked a ton about it over multiple episodes and talked about Frank Miller. We should do a deep dive on it, just like the deep dive that we're going to do on the 6 issues of American Flag. Yeah. For our next trade talks, which we'll get into a lot of similar themes with. This is Sal's pick.
You know, if we were talks. If we were a better show, we really would, after we do that, we would be mm-hmm. talking to Howard Chaykin. Like if we were a real comic book podcast, yeah. We would be talking to Frank Miller after we do a trade talks. Yeah. On The Dark Knight Returns.
Let's reach out
to
Howard.
Can we make that happen?
Howard would, you know, he would love to talk about it.
Well, he was going to come on at one point, but we couldn't get a time.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do our next trade talk on American Flag. And I'm saying it now. We're going to get Howard checking.
Oh, boy. Well, you know what that guarantees?
Nothing.
That he'll be on Word Balloon within the next month.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk American Flag. Let's get shaken on. We'll have Suntress on at the same time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that'll be coming up, yeah, a couple weeks. We'll talk about American sure. Flag. Right?
Why not? We should be talking to Kevin O'Neill. Is he still alive?
He is not.
What about Pat Mills?
Ooh.
Is Pat Mills still alive? Yeah, I think he might be still alive.
You know, we still have connection with Richard Starkings, who I think did all the lettering.
Well, as the stuff. As the official talent booker of the Around Comics podcast, I'll work on that. Yeah,
I'll work on it. Sir. I'll work on it. All right. Okay. Hey, everyone, thank you for listening to this here episode. Let me know if The Last of Us is fucking with you as much as it is with me. Send us an email, info@aroundcomics.com. Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/aroundcomics. That's what I got. It's good to talk to you guys.
Yeah, that was fun. I love when we dive into something meaty like that and like, you know, actually have like different points of view or different ideas on stuff.
Chew on that bone.
Yeah, that was fun. Good stuff.
All right. We will be back next week, next Thursday, 8 o'clock Central Standard Time. If you're on the tubes to watch and chime in. Otherwise, catch us on your favorite podcast catcher. In the meantime,
in between time,
we'll be everywhere in
and around
them comic books
and stuff.
Frank Miller.